When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know what they do is they say, "Oh, we've got to see the tits." Yep, those are the tits. And you're like, "Well, good. We've all acknowledged the thing that we all know, that sometimes you see boobs, and you've used it as an excuse to see
and
boobs.
You see boobs, fine. And then immediate death. That's kind of how it works." Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening today. In our studio, we have Zach.
Hello.
We have Liz.
Hello.
And we have Kobe.
Howdy.
And we're going to be reviewing the 2012 horror/comedy, The Cabin in the Woods. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us today, we have Zach and Liz. If you would like to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them about the pod work you do, please.
Hello, I am Zachary Fortescom. I'm the creator of The Orphans, which is a science fiction podcast all about clones and space and civil war and lots of feelings. Yes, you can find it by searching The Orphans on any podcatcher or online.
The Orphans. How did you come up with the name The Orphans?
It was a long process to find the title because it was not the original title. And then I was like, this original title sucks. And it was too connected to like religious iconography that I was like, I didn't want to include at all in the show. And so we were like thinking about different things that would connect to like the series ongoing. And we stumbled upon The Orphans as a connection to Orphan Black, if that makes sense.
Yeah, with a TV show on Netflix. Yeah.
What?
And who are you?
I'm Elizabeth Campbell. I work on a couple of podcasts. Mainly I work on Wooden Overcoats as the production manager, which is a comedy sitcom about rival funeral directors. And I am the business manager for Victoriosity, which is a steampunk comedy mystery set in an alternate Victorian London.
So can you tell us a bit about you, how you got into podcasts? Because you have a full-time job.
Yes.
Doing serious stuff.
Yes.
How have you got involved in the podcast world as the production manager and the
My serious job is I'm a lawyer. I'm a criminal lawyer, which is...
So you need moments of levity in your life.
I mean, to be quite honest, yes, exactly that. It's a job that I enjoy very much, but could not do every second of my time. I got very lucky, to be honest, joining podcasting. I knew Felix Trench and David K. Barnes from university.
Yeah, okay.
We all did student theater together up in Edinburgh. And when we all moved to London, we lived together, and they made Wooden Overcoats season one while living with me.
Okay.
So I was the weird hanger-on. And when they wanted to make season two and start getting somebody to help organize and bring in some money and stuff like that, I was literally next door in the next room listening through the wall like a creeper, and elbowed my way into that. And it's been the best elbowing that I've ever done. It's been a joy.
Maybe Liz can do it. Yes, I can. I hear you.
I mean, you're not far off. You are not far off.
I enjoy the guys in Woody Overcoats, including obviously Tom, who's leads Victoriosity.
Yes.
All great bunch of guys. And we really do help. Really hold them in high esteem, especially because they were, Tom and Felix in particular, came on to the first recordings for FlixWatcher without us actually having released an episode. So they kind of like replied to a want ad on Facebook.
Forging the path. Yeah,
exactly.
And we've since had many, many others.
Yeah, I think you're potentially the last. Well, there'll be some cast. Belinda Lang, we've not had her on.
No,
I don't think you'll get Belinda Lang.
You might get Belinda.
Well, not in person. Yeah, we've been told.
But
have you met Belinda? Because she doesn't turn up.
No, she. So she plays Madeline, the narrator, and because she's got isolated parts and she's so busy and important, and we got very lucky to have her. She always records her lines separately. Mm. So Andy and John, our producers, have met her, and the rest of us. I don't know. It could just be Andy Goddard doing a voice, and we'll never know.
Wouldn't put it past
We'd
him.
We'd never know.
Just claiming it's Belinda Lang.
Yeah. Yes. Be like, oh yeah.
Found a pitch on the internet. He's like, yeah. Never that's realize. It. Yeah. They'll never work
out. Oh yeah. Go
do some Photoshop. I put the script name in.
Okay. So we're going to be talking about The Cabin in the Woods, which is your choice, Zach.
Yes, it is.
Can you tell us why you chose it for us? And also, you got 2 minutes for a synopsis, no more, no less.
Great. So
no,
I chose.
You got less.
So I chose this film because it is, I think it is a turning point in horror in the current generation, the current remit of horror. We've been very lucky to have such a renaissance in horror with franchises like The Conjuring have really changed horror, and you have It has come out, and that's a massive success. Mm-hmm. But I do really think that The Cabin in the Woods, because of how it redefined the genre, has really allowed for this kind of renaissance of horror to come about. And to tell you a bit about the film, it is essentially a movie that juxtaposes a B-movie horror of a group of young kids who go up to a cabin in the woods, juxtaposed against the people who are performing a ritual, a very technologically informed ritual, to kill them. Or, yes, and controls their fate through the medium of horror film.
What are your thoughts on Cabin in the Woods, Helen?
So I saw this at the cinema. I was massively disappointed with it. Mm. I really was really, really expecting a lot more from it. So I'm quite a big horror fan, and I think I was expecting another Scream, possibly. Mm. There's things about it that I really like. I really, really like kind of the sort of setup and that they're being watched. But I think once it gets to the bit with the bloodlines and that, I lose it a little bit. And I think for me, they try and fit too many slightly odd things in it. And I kind of would have been just enjoying it for the sort of, you know, conjuring up the destiny without, like, I still don't really work out what happens at the end.
World angry ends. Gods take over the world.
And that's because they didn't get the right amount of blood in, or they did get the right amount of blood in. Or
so what it is they, it's not about the blood. It's that they're performing a ritual in that a certain number of them must die in a certain way, and that will appease the gods. They are a sacrifice. And if it's performed in the right way, they will agree to stay dormant and remain.
The four archetypes, well, five archetypes. The virgin is an optional death. They have to kill one of each to appease the elder gods, basically. Yeah.
Or they will come back.
And they don't. And so the Elder Gods come and blow up the world.
Yeah.
No sequels.
Yeah. I would very much like to see more exploration of this world. They set up such a lovely kind of world that you see only glimpses of. And I do think there's room for a Cabin in the Woods TV series.
What are your thoughts, Liz?
Both agree with Helen, and in fact will one up that. I have been massively disappointed by this movie twice. The first, because I used to like, kind of the schlocky horrors in the 90s and Scream, and I Know What You Did Last Summer, Final Destination. There was a whole genre, and to be honest, I haven't really seen much horror since then, but I used to watch a lot of those, and I really like Joss Whedon. Buffy is one of my, you know, all-time best shows, and I was really excited, and I knew what the premise was. I knew, you know, it was a piss take of those kind of movies, and that the whole concept was actually was being controlled by the secret organization, and all of these people are being kind of forced into the tropes that we see. And I thought, oh yes, that sounds clever. oh, it's going to be, we're going to have a movie. And then subtly we're going to see them discovering that they're actually all being controlled into doing this. And it wasn't that. And in many ways, I suppose it's my own fault for getting my hopes up. But the thing is, you know, the twist from minute one, you know, it starts in the office. So it's not a twist. It's just a premise, which, sure.
That's the main twist.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's the premises, but there's the twist with the kind of the gods, I think.
Yeah, there's a twist where they break out of the mold. And I think that's fair. But I think I assume that it was going to be a kind of clever build up to a reveal that this is actually a controlled thing. Again, you know, maybe that was my own fault for thinking it. But I got that in my head. I saw it the first time and I, you know, it's good. I like it, but I was disappointed because I thought it was going to be a bit cleverer. And then when Zach suggested this movie, somehow in my brain, I thought, oh yes, I remember that. That's really clever. And then I watched it again. And I go, oh no, I've done it again. I've assumed it was a different movie, and it's fine.
I thought it
but not
would
as
have
good.
Got better. I thought like maybe I just missed things the first time around, and maybe it will be the film that it said it was going to be to me.
I think watching it back with a bit more of a fine tooth comb, I think also, my fundamental problem with this is again, it's good, it's funny, I like it, but it could have easily been so much more. There's a lot of really good ideas that they just kind of state and then quickly abandon, and you kind of think, no, just follow that through. That was good.
Like what?
Well, luckily I've brought a sheet of notes. I think you know, one of the big thing. I mean, possibly before I get into this, does Kobe want to tell us what he thinks?
No,
of this
movie? Sorry. Go to your main beefs.
Well, I think, it sets up some really good concepts about, you know, the rules, the things that we'd recognize from these movies, the archetypes being kind of the big one. There's the virgin, the whore, the scholar, the soldier, and the fool. And yes, it's true. And that comes back in. And, you know, part of the movie is that they are all manipulated to becoming those archetypes. They aren't that at the start and they become manipulated. And the beginning of the movie does an excellent, like there's a real economy of writing in the first scene with the five characters where they immediately do a small thing that shows you that they're not those archetypes.
Mm.
You know, the virgin immediately, we know that she's been sleeping with her professor and the one who's the scholar, we see him first catch a football. He said he's the top of the football team.
Yeah.
You know, Kurt recommends some books. Like, you know, it's, despite what they look like and all that, they just do a small little thing and you're like, all right, these characters have a bit of depth. But they don't do it for all of them. They kind of forget. And so they do that. What's the blonde one?
Jules.
Yeah. She doesn't really get that. We get a line slightly later on where they say she's pre-med.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they kind of forget. And I think
She makes out with a wolf, a stuffed
wolf.
Yeah.
But we don't see her not be a whore.
That's once they go into the cabin and that's when their archetypes are starting to be forced upon them, wasn't it?
Well, with her, it's even earlier because they say that the bleaching of her hair was what's like dropping her IQ points.
Well, and this is it though, but we never really get to see her not dumb blonde.
No, yeah, I think that's fair.
And that's the thing. So I think I think they just kind of, we are told, oh, we've made her dumb by the hair dye, but we're not shown it, and you just think, well, you had a good thing going, and you've not.
So if she'd have gone at the start of the film, she'd you'd see her getting a bleach out with the dark hair and doing X, Y, Z.
I mean, the first thing we see her doing is taking out textbooks from Dana's bag, saying, "Why do you bring these?"
Yeah.
But the thing is, if the whole point is to show her as something different, then show her going, oh, I love this sociology textbook, or I don't know, you know, something like that, to just say, oh yeah, no, she's not just a dumb whore. Sorry, it's not necessarily calling that, but you know, the archetype, she is something different. So I think they only kind of half did that one.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think, you know, similarly, they do that with, you know, they're talking about that they have to choose to transgress to be punished. Again, a real horror trope, this dispositional alignment theory that, you know, the sinners must be punished and we want to see them be naughty and then get stabbed. And yeah, you've got the characters who, you know, they, well, first of all, they're all manipulated, so is it even free choice? Who knows? But like, okay, Jules and Kurt have sex in the woods. They deserve to die. Fine, that's a common trope. But like the scholar chap, Holden, he doesn't transgress. He has his opportunity with the one-way mirror, where he makes the conscious choice to say, no, I will not see the boobs.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, well, that's the setup. We know that he's an all right dude. Then you see him later on making out with Dana. That's surely the point where he's transformed, where he's supposed to transgress. And she says, oh, I don't want to have sex with you. And he says, oh, whatever you want. And you go, oh, yes, that's the correct answer, sir. Why did he deserve to die, Zach?
Angry gods. No, I didn't particularly see it that way in that they were transgressing in that way. I can understand that point with them having sex in the woods, but I think the transgression itself is them meddling in the room of horrors.
Well, that's the other rule that they give, which is they have to choose a way to die.
Yes.
So they choose the not zombies, the hillbilly, cannibal, whatever, which is very funny.
No, I chose zombies. No, you chose zombies. Not these zombies.
That's a great scene.
Backwoods hillbilly pain worshipping zombies. Yeah.
But
totally
again,
different species.
If the rule's the world that in order to appease this ritual, they have to choose their way to die.
Yeah.
Kurt dies by accident in a very funny scene. So I forgive it because it's a very funny scene.
Yeah.
But
in trying to escape them.
But okay.
Because they've fought and escaped. So already they are going against what the God's rules are.
Mm.
So his death is not, is coincidental.
They're trying at the end to save the world though by having Dana shoot Marty.
Mm.
If they just had to kill five kids, why don't they just drive that van off a cliff? Why did they need to go with the cannibal zombies? What are the rules of this universe?
Well, I think it was very much I think first of all that was a last ditch attempt to save things. We don't know if her shooting him would save everything, despite of all the characters saying that it would.
Yes.
However, I think it was very much like this is an ancient ritual. This is how it's like to be done. And it's very much implied throughout the whole time that the gods are watching what is happening and are enjoying the show. It is the greatest show on earth. We need the goods. Oh, do we really have to see the nudity? We're not the only ones watching this.
Yeah, I think that's kind of fair. I just felt that, but like these are just examples. I just felt where they decided to play on a trope, kind of half committed, and then kind of forgot they were doing the thing and then went somewhere else. And it was just a bit like, oh, okay, well, you've said what you were going for. Because they always have a line saying, well, they have to make the choice, or, oh, we've fixed the hair dye, which is fine. But then they explained to you what they were going for and then just didn't bother.
I didn't have a problem with that. No. I quite enjoyed this film. I saw it in the cinema when it first came out as well. And I think my main takeaway from it at that time was that I don't really watch that much horror, so maybe I wasn't getting all the kind of references. Since seeing it, this is the second time I've seen it since it came out. Haven't watched any much more horror, but do get a bit more of the references, and it hasn't really changed in that respect for me. But I just generally kind of took it for what it was, as like a very obvious satirical view on the horror genre. If you want something a bit more nuanced, then you're looking at the Scream films, you know, as a kind of like, yeah, this is how horror films work. But I think this was just like, this is how horror works because they have to do it because of, you know, X, Y, Z beings above that we don't ever see, but they need the blood in the right order and fine, blah, 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 blah. Plus then you have Bradley Whitford and Rich Jenkins kind of being comedic in another office.
It's
somewhere.
Very funny. Yeah. It is very funny.
Yeah. See, what I took away from it.
So I wasn't thinking about it on the levels that you were.
Severe pedantry.
The thing is, it sets itself up to be taken on that level. And it tries to make itself more complicated than it needed to be. And in by doing that, it takes away some of the fun because you're kind of overthinking it.
Which I have definitely done.
I don't know that it necessarily does. I mean, from the first scene, it's very comedic and it's meant to juxtapose.
It's going for clever.
It's going for clever. Yeah,
and
that is fair.
And again, I'm a Joss Whedon fan. He is clever.
Yes. Maybe it's True Goddard who's the problem.
True.
No. But I do think it does from the start tell you kind of, what they're going for. And yes, it is clever, but also they're here to sit on these tropes, have some fun with them, twist them in certain ways. I never felt that it betrayed its own logic.
But one thing it does betray is it betrays its horror in that it's not particularly scary and there's not really that much inventive horror. So it's like, okay, yeah, it's kind of funny, but there should at least be some jumps or some shocks or...
There was
some...
a unicorn.
But I don't...
That was pretty
but
great.
But again, I don't think that's the point of it. I think the point... Like, I think they're not trying to make a horror film. They're trying to deconstruct the horror genre. I think, like, in you can see in the selection of the monsters, like, when they say, oh, maintenance always choose the same ones, like, it's not that interesting. It's a bit boring. They've chosen the bland zombie torture death family. I think they're making a point of saying, like, this is the standard B-movie horror. They're not trying to make the new face of horror. They're trying to take the genre, deconstruct it, and show you the tropes. And they really want to, peel back the layers of it, peel back the horror of it, and just show you what is what's working, what are the cogs inside of this.
My only main issue with this is that it's a bit too obvious with what it's trying to do. The virgin, quote unquote, I can't remember the names, I'm not going to learn them.
Dana, virgin. They're archetypes, that's the point. Yeah. They don't need names.
When, you know, a common thing in horror films is that they use a weapon that's reusable. Well, yeah, keep hold of it and then have the shock. They give her the shock so she drops it and, you know, forgets about it straight away. So things like that, I was just like, okay, well, they're just going to explain, you know, the pheromones in the mist outside, which means it's driving crazy, which means they have to have sex outside inappropriately in an unsafe place. And I just took it as like face value. They're just kind of going, ha, that's why all those things, which people who, like someone like myself, who doesn't really like horror for reasons such as, that's a dumb thing to do. Why are you going to separate out? You should keep in a group. Like those kind of things. So I just took it as a non-horror fan going, yes, that is stupid. I'm glad someone's acknowledged that. Let's move on to the next thing.
I agree.
And that's why I perhaps as a, I think that's perhaps why I took, I liked it more because I was just going, yes, you've acknowledged that's a stupid thing in horror. Go to the next point. And to refer back to your point at the start, Zach, when you're talking about the kind of new wave of horror films, not seen Conjuring, not seen Annabelle. I think the premise of those look a bit dumb, but I do like the Blumhouse kind of style of things.
Yeah.
You Get Outs and the Purges and stuff like that. I think that's a really kind of, and that kind of horror aspect to us is a really, and The Quiet Place and stuff like that. For me, I think that's a really kind of interesting type of horror, and they're completely different to this kind of stuff that Cabin in the Woods is kind of poking fun at. And I think that's probably why they appeal to me a lot more than the Evil Dead, Dawn of the Dead, you know, what's the one with the spike head, pinhead one?
Oh, Hellraiser.
Yes.
That Cabin in the Woods is alluding to.
Well, I think Cabin in the Woods is the reason why I think there has been that shift in the horror genre towards things that are so different, or if they're doing a retread of something else, they give it a more modern twist, they give it more depth, because modern audiences have seen this and they're not going to respond as well to just the same tropes over and over again.
See, possibly, I think realistically, things like, weirdly, Scary Movie. The sequels let us never acknowledge, but the first Scary Movie, for all of its, there's a lot of kind of gross out humor and real silliness, but like that was, this is it. If they're going for comedy, that was just a real, rip of all of those movies. And it was really well done. I do think this one was, while it's funny, was trying to be more intellectual about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, I couldn't tell you the time frames of like when these movies started shifting, but you know, I think, I don't know if this, this came out right before the superhero trend.
Chris Hemsworth got cast as Thor during filming of this.
Yeah.
Was that then? Because Thor came out before this.
No, Thor came out.
So they filmed this in 2009 and it was delayed and only released in 2012.
MGM went bankrupt.
Yeah, because the studio went bankrupt. Whoops. But, you know, one of the reasons I think we're getting different horror, not to get too nuanced, is they're spending all their money on the superhero movies. Mm. And a lot of horror is actually really cheap to make, or the horror that we're seeing now, which is really, psychological. Mm. you know, I don't know if this movie was enough of a teardown of the old tropes to have changed the genre.
No, I don't think it's single-handedly responsible, but I do think it was a massive contributing factor because it's a very popular film and it was very popular on home video as well. And I think enough people started recognizing the tropes because of it that the old formula for horror slowly started to not be as enticing, if that makes sense.
I think there with a lot of horror fans, they recognize the tropes and they looked out for them in films. So that was part of the fun, almost like a bingo card. Mm. And also, you know, the thing of within the first 5 minutes, you have 4+ people and you kind of think you put them into those pockets, into those boxes. And part of the game is to see if it does play out as you expect them to do. Mm. I would have thought that's, is that part of the fun of a...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the fun. It is interesting and, you know, partly just seeing who gets killed first is always good fun. I agree with everything that everyone said about it. I was just really disappointed from kind of how it had been built up or sold to me. And I don't know, I just think that it doesn't do as well as it thinks it does, either being a horror, a comedy, or being a takedown on the genre.
Agreed.
It kind of does all three of them, but it doesn't do one of them really well or all three of them really well. There's things in it that I do really like. I really like the kind of like the Japanese schoolgirls and how they defeat the Ringu kind of character.
Doesn't every other region defeat the...
But we don't see how the other regions defeat it, and it's just that one which I really like. I mean, it's a shame that we get boobs, but we don't get naked Chris Hemsworth, which, you know, had it been inside, then we might have done to but get the balance.
Wasn't that part of the piss take on the genre is doing?
There are always boobs in those movies.
That's the thing, wasn't it? I think that's part of the play on it.
Play on it with a naked Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. I'm okay with that. Yeah.
That kind of would have been a bit more of a sort of play on the genre.
Again, it was one of those things.
Because it's him as well. And you
they had, you know, again, their entire quote-unquote takedown. Oh, sorry, that sounded really unnecessarily sarcastic.
Quote-unquote.
But, you know, what they do is they say, oh, we've got to see the tits. Yep. Those are the tits. And you're like, well, good. We've all acknowledged the thing that we all know, that sometimes you see boobs and you've used it as an excuse to see boobs.
You see boobs and then immediate death. And that's kind of how it works.
Fine, but it's really more, you've just stated a thing as opposed to done anything particularly creative with it, which is, again, it's fine. And I did actually like this movie. I appreciate I'm coming across really negative, but it could have been more... It could have been really clever. The concept is great. And it just misses, again, I think, on all those three things.
Also, when they kind of get to the monster store, I mean, some of those monsters in there are fucking awesome.
Well, yeah.
Like, you would have liked to have seen... Like, I really, really like the kind of the modern Pinhead Hellraiser type thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some really, really kind of inventive... weird freaky death shit that happens at the end.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh, if you'd have brought some of this in a bit earlier, some of those crazy beasts. And that's, I think then for me, that's when the film got more fun, is when, you know, they really started messing with genres and reality and things like that a little bit more.
That's fair.
I think let's head to the scores, guys, and keep on talking, obviously. This was, I think this is Drew Goddard's first directorial film.
Yes, he then went to create Daredevil and then direct Bad Times at the El Royale.
Is he in charge of Daredevil?
I think he
was. Which one?
The Netflix.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But no, I do think he was only responsible for like maybe the first half of the first season and then he fucked off.
Well, he was the Cloverfield writer, is that right?
Yeah. He also wrote the script for the definitely not happening anymore Sinister Six movie.
Wow, they're still going.
No. They're not anymore. Not now that Tom Holland's on the scene.
Now, I was just thinking in terms of director. I've known his name's loomed large, typically with Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Josh.
But he's only actually done this and a few episodes of The Good Place and Bad Time. So I was quite surprised. I just assumed he was... his name it was loomed so large that he directed the film. Mm. So this being his directorial debut was like
he was a writer.
Yeah,
yeah. So he was working alongside Joss on all of the Buffy. Alias and Buffy and Angel.
Yeah, he did season 7 of Buffy. Mm. as where I had
first heard about him.
And yeah, I mean it's. I think it's directed well. Mm. I don't think that's the problem.
I really love all the things that he's. I love Bad Times at the El Royale. I think it's really, really well done. And you know, obviously, Chris Hemsworth. I am wondering if the issues that you guys are feeling with it comes from the writing process, because they wrote it over a weekend.
Yeah, really, maybe that is the extent of second draft.
Yeah, maybe you should just been in that hotel room and just been like, what's the theme?
That is Zach and I have written together.
Listening in next door.
I say written together, I mean Zach's done writing and I've sat next to him shouting, what's the theme of every scene?
It's very helpful.
I think it is extremely helpful.
You know what? I'm not even being sarcastic.
So yeah, Zach.
Yes.
Recommendability score out of 5.
I honestly would give this a 5 out of 5. I really, really enjoy this movie. I'm sorry that you guys don't, but I would recommend this movie.
Liz.
I would still recommend this more than I wouldn't. I think it is good. I would probably give it a 3.2.
Helen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I enjoyed about this, and I think at the time, it was pretty much probably one of the best horror films to have happened at the right time. But it's more that I was promised much more than I felt was delivered. And, you know, I just think, I know it's really hard, but Scream is just like one of the best films ever. And what they did is nowhere near as what they were trying
to
do.
That's fair.
Which kind of unfair on Cabin in the Woods, but they did kind of promise that. And also I think if you think this is like the best film ever, but you've never seen Scream or you've never seen Cube, then you should definitely watch those ones.
Scary Movie 1.
I wouldn't even really class this as a horror.
I'd more class this as
in the same way I wouldn't class Airplane as a disaster film. It's like a piss take of a disaster film.
It's not quite a horror, it's not quite a comedy, it's not quite any of these things.
I mean if you're saying from a horror point of view, it's really not that much great horror in it either. The monsters at the end are the best horror thing about it. But yeah, if you haven't seen this and you're kind of curious about it and you kind of like horror generally, I gave it a 3.5.
I'm going to go for a 4 here. I really did enjoy it in the cinema. I'm putting my score in the wrong place. 3.5 for Helen.
He's fixing the scores.
Yeah.
It's hard work working a spreadsheet.
I'm going to go for 4. I think it's a good film. Interesting ideas. Maybe it doesn't stick the landing, or the landing's not the way it wants to go, but I like the way it goes. It kind of has the explanations for stupid things. I refer to stupid things in standard horror, and kind of makes me go, and there's a bit of a release. I feel vindicated for all those other ones, and also kind of sets the mark in the line for the stuff that I like horror-wise going forward. So I'd watch it. I recommend it to a few people who say, you know, should I watch this? Yeah, watch it, and let me know what you think afterwards.
Yeah.
Repeat viewing score.
Again, I'm gonna give this like a 4.5. Like, I watch this quite regularly.
How regularly is regularly?
Oh gosh, like I watch it probably like at least once a year, I think. Like,
that's
I've
a lot.
Yeah, I think I've seen it quite a lot. I really do enjoy this movie, and I've shown it to other people, and I will happily watch it anytime it's on. And like, yeah, so I'm gonna root for this movie, guys.
Liz.
I expect that in 5 years' time, I will have forgotten that I was disappointed by this movie and go, oh, Cabin in the Woods, I remember that. That was a great film.
So clever.
And watch it again.
So you have to also forget that you recorded this episode. So you can be like, maybe there's a reference somewhere on the internet.
I have a terrible memory, so it's very possible. So, you know, there is a good chance. To be honest, I feel like this is a film I would take a break and give another go at.
Sure.
I don't know, because again, it has lots of potential. It's got lots of good ideas, and I kind of find that fascinating. Also, I really enjoy, as you might have noticed, finding the bits that don't quite stick and you know, talking about that. So to be honest, I actually think it's a really interesting film, even though I'm a bit frustrated by it. So I would give it a 4.
Helen.
Pretty much everything you've said, I agree with. So I think 7 years is a reasonable gap. In 7 years' yep. time,
shall we meet up? Yeah. Shall we have a reviewing?
I think if someone says, oh, I've never seen Cabin in the Woods, shall I watch it? I'll be like, yeah, sure, I'll join. I think, you know, I quite enjoyed seeing it again and finding it as equally as frustrating. I think there's you know, there's kind of something about that. And I do find that I find horror quite easy to rewatch because it's kind of fun. I'll go a 4 as well with that one, with Liz. But yeah, as I say, I don't know. I will watch it again. I don't know when. 7 years time.
Yes. I'm going to go for 2 here. I probably will watch it again. And in the world that we no longer inhabit, where you just switch on a TV and see what's on. If I was still doing that, I would, and it came on. I'd, you know, half an hour to kill, an hour and a half to kill, I'd watch it. It wouldn't turn off. But I don't think I'd go looking for it necessarily. Small screen score.
Unlike all of you, I did not actually see this in the theaters.
Oh.
I never saw this in the theaters. So my only experience with this is on the small screen. I think I would have liked to have seen that final third of the movie on a big screen. It feels like there's a lot of detail in there that I could take in that's not necessarily coming across on the small screen. That being said, I do still think it's very, very enjoyable. I mean, clearly, if I'm the one bringing it to the table on a small screen viewing. So I think I will give it 3.8, I think.
The decimal places are infectious.
I kind of agree in that. I think it translates all right to a small screen, but I think that last third when they're in the facility and all the even that panning shot, that great panning shot where you see all the cubes with all the monsters in it. You know, my TV at home, which I did watch it on, is fairly big, so I think I got a decent view. But I think that would have been, I mean, I did see it in theaters, but I can't remember the experience particularly well. Clearly, I think that probably would have benefited from bigger screens. So I'm going to go with 2.5, right in the middle.
Helen.
So I did enjoy seeing it at the cinema, as I think any horror film is great with a shared audience, whether they're there and enjoying it or not. And seeing the two bits, like the monsters and the cubes, and also the demise of Chris Hemsworth. I mean, it's great to kill off one of your biggest stars relatively early on.
But I don't think any of them were stars. I think the biggest stars were Bradley Whitford.
But when it came out, yeah. Chris Hemsworth had already come out.
Yeah.
So even though it was made before,
yeah.
We all were like, oh, it's got Thor in it. Mm-hmm. He's going to survive. He's got to, because he's a big name. So in regardless of what order it was filmed, it was released after Thor. So he was, you know, the big name in it. And it doesn't survive to the end. Spoiler.
Such a good scene.
It is a great scene because it's so bonkers and absurd. But the thing is, you know something's going to happen with the bike because they've made it obvious that there's a bike in it.
Well, you know, watching that whole time, he's just like, I'm going to come back. But you've seen in the movie, like, already
the
that there's
killed.
A fucking force field there. Like, you as the audience know this is going to fuck up. But just seeing their commitment to it.
Yeah, you're like, he might survive?
Yeah. No, it's a good scene. It's a good scene.
But also, I think it does kind of work well in the home. And, you know, if you've never seen it, it is on Netflix and it's good. So I'm going to 4.
Yeah, small screen score. I don't think I got much from the cinema. I'm going to say a 4 as well. I think I can't really remember seeing it at the cinema. Seeing it as like a, whoa, I need to see this right now. It's just like, this is the film that's out this week. So I'm going to make sure I get to it. If it was out now, I'd probably think, yeah, I'll probably just wait until it comes out. Exactly.
Yeah.
Engagement score.
Engagement score. And I watched this movie in two sittings. And when I had to break off the first time, I was very annoyed that I had to, because I had to go do something else. And I was like, I want to keep watching. I want to see what's happening. I've made an hour in. I want to see the rest of this now. I've committed. So I was clearly very engaged, still an hour into the movie. So I'm thinking that I'm probably going to give it a 4.25.
Liz?
I agree. Actually, give this high engagement. I think, it was interesting. I wasn't bored. The only thing I would say is because I think, again, this is maybe my own expectations, because I thought there was going to be, you know, a reveal and a twist. I was waiting for that, you know, that moment when you go, oh, I see what's happening, which, you know, didn't really happen. So I think there's a slight kind of the personal sadness on that.
You both had like weight of expectation there that wasn't really presented.
Well, I think because the concept lends itself so well to that.
Mm.
I think what we were assuming. I don't think we were assuming that out of the blue. And I think that would have made it. You know, when I obviously redirect the remake. When I've forgotten about this movie in 7 years.
We should make a film about... Listen, there's a hut in the woods. Yeah, there's a hut in the forest.
And it turns out, yeah. There's no that. But I think it is a movie I was not bored watching through. I would, go Zacko with 4.25.
Cool.
Helen?
So I just wanted to say that we talked briefly about the TV series. It would be kind of cool because they could have...
Which TV series?
Potential... So each episode would be a different... one of the scenarios from around the world, and they could bring back the monsters and it would kind of...
Did I miss a conversation?
I thought that, because of how it ends, they've kind of famously said there won't be any sequels to this. But I would love to see more stuff done in this world. Because like you said, there was so much potential. Yeah. Both of you said there's so much potential in what they made.
Well, weirdly, a thought of mine. So I also... I just watched Stranger Things before I watched this. And... it actually had been a while since I just watched a movie. I'd been watching a lot of series. And I think one of the reasons why it just kind of stated what it was doing and then never actually finished an idea was they didn't really have the time to develop it. And I think that, you know, if this was a Stranger Things style many episodes, you could really have that reveal and that build and the playing with all those, the interesting ideas that they raised a bit more. Mm. So that was a thought I had actually while I was watching it. Should be longer.
Yeah.
So do you guys think, this concept of a TV series, would it be an anthology set in the universe, or would it be a continuing story following the same characters and watching them perish or survive each oncoming new task per episode?
So my idea, please don't steal it, would be that there would be the different scenarios across the world, and they would all be happening at the same time, but each episode would be those scenarios.
So an anthology aspect.
Yeah, and that, but then the kind of, there would be in each one, the order would be slightly broken, and then those survivors, like there might be one survivor who was meant to die first, they all end up meeting in kind of like this sort of basement or similar setting, and then there would be some kind of climax / weird shit going on there. So. Yeah. I think that would be kind of interesting. And with each setting, so one of the films that I really, really, really like is Westworld, which I kind of think the film, not the TV, but that is a kind of a horror set in a Western setting. So they could have a really interesting idea of these different setups that are not necessarily going to a cabin in a horror in the woods. It could be that, you know, they're going on this specific thing, which then turns into a horror, and they bring in different kind of horror aspects into those kind of scenarios, which I think they kind of sort of do a little way, you know, they just pick that the horror thing. But again, yeah, there's lots of ideas that I really, really like, but I just don't think they kind of pull off. And I think the other thing is because it was Joss Whedon, the expectation was so high on him. But you know, this on engagement, this film is like, it's 95 minutes long.
It's short.
It is short, and you know, the engagement is pretty high. I was a bit like, really? At the end, I was a bit like, and I don't know. I think I'd had to go through too many steps to come to Sigourney Weaver explaining it all, which is like one of the more fun cameos that I was a little bit okay.
Did you know they originally wanted Jamie Lee Curtis to do it?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did she say no? Or?
I think so.
she's like, busy.
No, I'm done. And then she came back and did Halloween, and everyone loves it. And they're making two more.
is that a good
they're
thing?
They're making two more. They're making them money. Back to back.
So engagement score?
So, I'm going to go for a four.
I'm going to go for... I think first time watching would be higher. This time, perhaps equally as high, because I feel like I was, the distance benefit of watching it quite far apart, and also thinking I was going to take more from it. But I think subsequent watches, I probably wouldn't be needing to pay that much attention. So I'm going to go for 3.5 based on my average of my scores going forward and in the past. So gives us an average score, an overall score of 3.84375. This is where we go to Twitter. And as you all know who listen to the podcast, we reach out to guys on Twitter asking to give a short review and a 5-star rating. Look out for our tweets on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. Zach, can you take the first?
Yeah. Right. I want you to watch this, says a satire that does horror better than lots of movies trying in earnest. 4.5 stars, Craig.
Liz.
This is from the Tasteless podcast. Great name. It says, this movie is one of the all-time best cameos. It made me gasp when a certain someone showed up near the end. The whole movie was creative and helped me overcome my prejudices against horror. And the stars is a solid 4.
Helen.
So this one is from Flix X-Rayed. This movie has me in stitches every time, and I love it. It is such an amazing horror comedy. The first time I saw it in theaters with my friends, there were these really drunk girls in the front row of us who were screaming all the way throughout. It was hilarious. They didn't give any stars. Don't like the reviews without stars.
Zach, do you want to go for the last one?
At every turn, a slasher of conventions and expectations. 4.5 stars. I just want to say thank you, Twitter, for really supporting me and my choice of this movie, unlike the panelists.
Hey!
I think you've done well.
I think you did well.
Okay, guys, can you briefly sign off by telling us where we can find you online and say... Howdy,
adios.
Howdy doody, adios.
Arrivederci.
Yeah. Just for you North Americans. That's what you say all the time.
That is what we
howdy
sound like.
Howdy doody, eh?
Oh, eh.
Oh, eh, yeah.
In Minnesota.
You can find me on Twitter at ZachFG, as well as you can find my podcast at Orphans Audio, and you can find us across all sorts of social media under those same handles. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a real joy doing the show.
Thank you.
You very much.
You can find me personally on Twitter at Liz X Campbell. That's Liz and then just the letter X Campbell. My podcasts are at Overcoats Wooden and at Victoriosity. It's been absolutely wonderful, guys. Thank you so much for letting us come and let me rant at you.
Catch you later, guys.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.